Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Welcome to the Movie Squad podcast. My name is Tristan Fidler.
And my name is Simon Murata.
This is an official RTRFM podcast where we share our weekly edition of Movie Chat as heard on Breakfast with Pam, Pam Boland, every Friday morning, 7:30 a.m. on RTRFM 92.1. And we're talking about lots of movies in this episode, including a bonus review for the podcast listeners. We're going to cover the upcoming Perth Festival film Showing Up, directed by Kelly Reichardt and Michelle Williams, which we'll talk a little bit about later after the main two reviews that were heard on air over the airwaves of RTRFM, and including touching upon a film that I had not seen and only heard about in relation to Monster Fest, an Australian sci-fi. I mean, is it a comedy? Is it a thriller? What is it, Simon?
It's Time Addicts. it's a multitude of things, but it is a new time loop genre flick made on a small budget but looking spectacular. I'll cover that off in the second half of today's episode, but you kick us off with a roundtable discussion, which is always fun because we've all seen Bottoms, the new feature from Emma Seligman starring Rachel Sennett and Ayo Itaberi.
Yes, one that we had mentioned in previous episodes, and I knew Pam was very excited to see. So it was great that all of us had seen it and could share our thoughts about it. But yeah, out in cinemas now at the time of recording, and definitely one to look out for if you're a fan of femme-focused comedies with a queer angle. This is a film about a high school, a pair of friends who start up a fight club for girls. It's strange, it's colorful, it's funny, it's Bottoms.
Could the ugly, untalented gays please report to the principal's office?
Guess that's you guys.
Tonight is our night.
We're getting the cooch.
I'm gonna talk to Brittany.
You could say hi to Isabel.
What would I say?
Hey girl, how's your boyfriend?
How's his penis? Mirror, mirror
on the wall. Who's I'm gonna expel you both
for committing a crime against
Jeff. Get out of the car.
You can't tell me what to do.
Get out of the freaking car.
We were just practicing for our self-defense club.
So it's like a fight club?
Yes.
Just stay in your lane until you're munching beaver at Wesleyan.
Yes, sir.
Every Friday on Breakfast, we take some time for the cinematic arts and we look into the brains of the blockbuster babes. Simon Murata, Tristan Fidler, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pam.
Very excited about Movie Squad this week because I have strong feelings about one of the movies. And it's the first movie we're going to be talking about this morning. Tristan is going to be talking about it. I've got questions, I've got thoughts, and I want to hear yours. We're talking about Bottoms. Tristan, what's going on?
Well, it's very exciting because we've all seen it, and I know that you're looking forward to it, Pam. We talked earlier in the year about this film, and it's one I would assume that me and Simon were also looking forward to because this is the follow-up film from director Emma Seligman and actor Rachel Sennett, and they made a film together called Shiva Baby, which is very high on our favourite films of that year. Simon.
Yeah, I think it was like number three or thereabouts, a film we both loved, Pam, before your time as Brekkie host.
I also love this film.
I was going to say, what were your thoughts on Shiva Baby?
Oh, great. I loved it. I thought it was funny and clever and sad and relatable in so many aspects. But yeah, I really loved it. I think it was one of my favourite movies of that year too.
One of the things I want to say about Shiva Baby very quickly, because it happened actually last week, RTRFM presenters, when they come up to me and talk about Movie Squad, the film that is most frequently cited as like, hey, I went and watched Shiva Baby. It was amazing. and a presenter did that this very week, you know, 3 years later, but still, it still counts. So I think that's a film, if you haven't seen it yet, really funny, interesting drama. It's a comedy with a horror movie score. It's just so prickly and interesting. I really love that film.
Well, it's definitely, but it's also like it's interesting to talk about comedy with relation to the previous film Shiva Baby and this film Bottoms, because it's glad to hear that, you know, I'm glad to hear that people take up the recommendation and enjoy it, but there's also an element of Shiva Baby that's not enjoyable, and definitely if you're not a fan of the comedy of awkwardness, cringe, embarrassment, Curb Your Enthusiasm style of people putting their foot in their mouths and just being in situations that are like you want to escape. I know that's not the comedy that everyone likes, so it's definitely a tolerance for that kind of thing. And with Bottoms, their new film, it feels like they're kind of trying, going into a different type of comedy. It's not so much about cringe awkwardness. It feels a bit broader, a bit more surreal, and definitely more colourful in the way it looks and what it's about. Mm-hmm. So basically, Bottoms, what is it about? So I remember hearing about it because I think Rachel Senator, they were talking during the promotional rounds of Shiva Baby and just saying, this is a film where teenage girls start up a fight club, which is the log line, but there's a bit more to it there. But basically, you have Rachel Sennett with one of her collaborators, comedian, podcaster, Ayo Itabiri, who now has a higher profile, definitely because of her role as Sydney in the TV show The Bear. Mm. But basically, they play a couple of high schoolers. So we're in this world where we have all these adults playing high schoolers, which was like, you know, how things are usually done, but even more after the wake of a show like Pen 15, where it just feels a bit more like incongruous seeing all these like adults, in the high school hallways with the lockers mm-hmm. and everything. Mm-hmm. But basically, they play a couple of young teenagers who are gay. They are also like unpopular. Doesn't seem because of their sexuality, more just because they just don't fit in with anyone. This is still a high school that, much like an 80s American teen high school movie, is ruled by the jocks and the mean girls. There's definitely the high school quarterback or the football captain, Jeff, played by Nicholas Galitzine, is kind of the king of the school, and his partner, Isabel, played by Havana Rose Liu. I guess, they're the kind of like the mean girl types who are very like, connected to their phones, connected to their how they look, and definitely with Ayo and Rachel's characters, they're just like wear like frumpy shirts and they just don't fit in. But basically, it all kicks off at the high school carnival where Isabel, the girlfriend of the football captain, gets into an argument with him. They stand up for her and then inadvertently cause a slight injury, which has a big repercussion for them in the school. They're called into the principal's office and they have to, stand up for themselves, and then they lie and say, well, we reacted the way we did because we're starting this self-defense class, this fight club for girls. And then they turn it into a real thing where they invite all the kind of like overlooked or sort of bullied or underappreciated girls in the school to be part of their after-hours self-defense class. So it's got a kind of a high concept to it, and it's definitely playing with a lot of archetypes and stereotypes and providing a queer kind of lens or vibe to this. And it's definitely in the tradition of films like Wet Hot American Summer, I'm a Cheerleader, and that kind of thing. And it has a very colorful kind of sense of scope to it as well. Now, we've all seen this, so I'm interested to hear what everyone thinks. But I'll start and just say that what can you rate a comedy on? Well, did it make you laugh? And I laughed. I did find this funny. Mm-hmm. I do think that Ayo Itabiri kind of is the star of the film. Mm-hmm. Rachel Sennett, who's been a breakout performer in other films like Bodies, 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 somehow just like either it's her character writing or something, it didn't quite work for me. And I think, I like this film, but my partner and I, after we saw this, there was a quality where it felt like this was like a first draft in a way. Like, I feel like with the concept and the people involved, I wanted it to be slightly better. But I still really enjoyed it, and it's been interesting to see the very divisive reaction. Some people love this film. Mm. Some people find it a bit lacking. But, Simon, I mean, where do you fall on this divide?
Yeah, and thank you for asking me before, Pam, because I do think that the opinions that matter most on this are from two cishet males, average age 38.
Yeah, I'm glad we got through yours first.
Look, I was probably a little bit more disappointed by this film. Mm. I think I actually love a broad, silly comedy, and Wet Hot American Summer is absolutely the right comparison, and I love that movie and the TV shows. This one, for me, I think, fell even further back in its broadness to, like, high school media project level.
Oh, wow.
Like, and I did find parts of it, amusing. One of the best jokes in it is that the school is actually super inclusive to the LGBTQI community. It's just that these two characters in particular.
They're just dorks.
Yeah, I think they self-describe as ugly, untalented, but which is not true, obviously. I think Ayo Edebiri is a star, like, not just in this, but she's an absolute star and is so funny, and I was laughing at her and with her throughout the entirety of the film. But I was kind of, like, overall, I liked the film and I was glad I saw it, but I was kind of just smiling through it as opposed to laughing through it.
Mm-hmm.
But surely that's enough from me. Pam, what did you think about Bottoms?
I think this movie was brilliant. So I went to see it with my sister and we were at a screening where we were very close to the screen, which was kind of bizarre experience. Sort of, like, arrived on time, but, like, all of the seats were taken, so we had to sit right in the front row. It was kind of a bizarre way to watch it, but I think that's an important thing to say as we sort of get
immersive
into my thoughts. I was really in the movie, which was kind of odd, but I think that almost made it better. I laughed so much at this movie, and I think I felt seen in ways where I hadn't felt seen in comedies, teen comedies like this before. It is a movie that if you go to and you are a woman who likes to date women, you are going to feel, like, attacked in the best way. You're going to feel, like, seen, and I think you're going to relate to people. I definitely thought that Rachel Sennett's character was somebody I was so annoyed by, but I know that character. I know that person, and I think that the writing of that character was, like, quite clever because it was so irritating. I think Aya Edebiri's character was way easier to sympathise with and was, I think, a better performance, but Rachel Sennett's character is so irritating. There was no reclamation arc for her for me. Like, at no point in the movie was like, I want to be friends with this girl, but I know this girl.
Yeah.
I think that so many references in it to, like you mentioned, But I'm a Cheerleader, there's, you know, not a mini spoiler, but there's, you should look out for it. So I'm kind of telling you. They go to this diner, and this diner is called But I'm a Diner, which is obviously referencing But I'm a Cheerleader. There's loads of these popcorned moments where I just am like, oh, I know what that's about. I know what that's about. And it feels like this movie that's catered to, you know, women that are my age that, you know, like dating women. And I feel like that comedy that doesn't apologize for itself or try to be a learning experience or some sort of giant statement about how hard it is to be gay, it's not trying to be that. It's trying to be silly and funny and easy to watch. And to have that presented to you without... I was kind of waiting for something bad to happen. I was kind of... In the least crass way possible, I was waiting for somebody to be sexually assaulted. I was waiting for somebody to be, you know, just for something bad to happen. So they were going to have to.
Because it is violent as well.
It is very violent. But it's so violent in such a silly, unbelievable way. Mm. So I think that the power in making a movie that is about, that's like centering a gay narrative that then doesn't, like, it's not, you don't talk about illnesses. We're not talking about sadness or coming out in its hard way. There's no hardness about this movie that feels like, oh, okay, let's have a break while we're sad and think about how sad it is that we're gay in the world. Like, there's no point in the movie where you feel that way. And I think the power of doing that and not apologizing for yourself in that center sort of narrative is so brilliant. So that was my, like, main channel of thoughts. But otherwise, I thought it was silly, stylized brilliantly. Nicholas Galitzine was ridiculous and so perfectly cast for that role. Looks like a Ken doll, like, really amazing. Just one of those movies where I probably will watch it again, but the shock factor of watching it in the cinema is something that I highly recommend for going and watching this movie, because it goes where you don't think it's going to go.
Sure.
I was, like, definitely shocked by the violence and the unapologetic violence. You know, it's a Fight Club where the first rule is how much they have to talk about it. Like, they're talking about the Fight Club so much. But I really think that this is a movie you should go and watch in the cinema, hear the laughs with everyone, and be in that mood where you're just like, what is going on? And you're looking away and you're flinching and you're laughing because it's so absurd and there's pineapple juice allergies. It is ridiculous. it's a ridiculous movie and a really enjoyable watching experience. That were my thoughts on it were positive.
Well, that's the thing as well, because, you know, as Simon was saying, you know, that I think that you know, it's made for an audience, and it's definitely, you know, providing something that may have not been there before. Mm. And that, you know, we tend to think, oh, you know, you can make a film about anything. It's, you know, there's so much freedom now. But you read a little bit about, you know, that they had trouble, you know, trying to get a school to film in because of the subject matter, the difficulty in getting this produced. So, you know, there's still a lot of, and particularly in, I guess, in American filmmaking, there's still a lot of kind of hoops to go through to make even just like a silly comedy in this mode. But so yeah, it's out in cinemas now, so definitely, you know, with Pam's recommendation. But you know, I liked it as well, and there's some really good performances in there as well. Definitely not mentioned yet is NFL player Marshawn Lynch as their teacher, who provides a very funny supporting role as they're basically as someone who is roped into being the supervisor for these violent after school beatdowns. But yeah, and then also, you know, you got Charlie XCX doing the score.
She did the score. That's absurd. At the end, when I was like, this score's hell good, and I got to the end and looked at the credits, and I was like, up to my sister, was like, it's Charlie, she did it. So
it's a very strange score as well.
It's a very strange score.
I will say, I did like the score. Some of the music cues did make me roll my eyes. They're too obvious.
But that's what's so good. All of it's too obvious. All the football players through the whole movie stay in their on-field uniforms.
Yes.
You never see a football player out of uniform. That's insane. And it's also, you know, ridiculous. One other really good thing I wanted to point out, which I read about this movie afterwards, was that all the actors, well, pretty much all of them, there was like maybe three actors that ended up not doing this, but all the actors had natural hair in the movie, so not only like the black actors were not encouraged to, you know, have overly like, you know, permed straight hair, but like all of the actors. So so to have a diversity and not just look at you know, a screen full of blow-dried, gorgeous, delightful hair, they look like high schoolers, you know. They have terrible hair, and some of them have great hair, but it's natural.
Well, that's a great secret. Like, whenever you're watching a movie, especially a TV show, pretty much assume certainly the female actors, but pretty much assume everyone is wearing a wig. Because it takes too much time to, like, do everyone's hair all the time.
Yeah.
the best example of that, I always think of Leslie Knope in Parks and Recreation.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Every time you see Leslie, she's wearing a wig.
Oh, my God.
Amy
Poehler's
wearing a wig.
Funny.
Because, you know, apply that to everything you watch.
Yeah.
So those little, there's absolutely a lot of really well-observed moments through Bottoms. So yeah, great to see you had that experience.
Yeah, it's great. We're gonna take a track from the score. It's a little bit jarring, but it's kind of amazing. I really love it. So Charlie XCX and Leo Birrenberg, who I don't know, but I'm gonna find out a little bit more about. They work together on the score, and this one is just the title track of the score. It's Bottoms is the name of it. It was part of the opening sequence of the film. It's very fun, and we'll come back and talk more about movies. A slightly more serious movie is next.
Pack us a bowl, then. Well, you smoked it all. Well, what are my options, then? Like, fiscally, you know?
I got a job later today that a couple of heads just bailed on.
What's a job?
A heist. But once you're inside, you'll find a duffel bag.
You are tuned to Breakfast here on your Sound Alternative. Now, we've had a bit of a laugh this morning. We're on Movie Squad. It's Movie Squad time. We're talking all about movies with Simon and Tristan. And we're moving on to something slightly more serious than hilarious, outlandish, gay, lesy comedies. We're getting into Time Addict. Simon, what's going on here? Sci-fi, Australian, what's happening?
Yeah, look, it's slightly more serious, but still funny.
Okay, it's still funny. It's a sci-fi comedy.
Yeah.
Okay, me being like, oh, it's more serious. I didn't read the comedy bit.
Pam, Bottoms isn't the only funny film.
It is. It's the only film that exists. It's hilarious, and I love it. Okay, comedy, but from Australia.
That's right.
Yeah,
good caveat. but this is a film. It's a time travel movie. It's actually, like, it falls into a, you know, very familiar genre, the time loop genre, where characters end up interacting with past and future versions of themselves. So many examples to cite. This movie definitely follows in the footsteps of Nacho Vigalondo's Time Crimes, The Endless. I know you're a fan of that film, Tristan. But there's a great, I guess, history, recent history even, of Australian films on this subject. We have Predestination by the Spierig brothers, Triangle, the Melissa George horror film. I think it was called The Visible Man. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Years ago?
Yeah. So Time Addicts, again, there's a lot of movies. Like, I won't say like this, but there's a lot of movies that cover similar ground. So what is its USP, right? What's the unique selling proposition here?
I can't remember what USP stood for there. Thanks.
And what it is this time it's about drug addicts.
Oh.
And so it is, like I said, or like you said, an Australian film set in Melbourne and centres on two basically no-hoper addicts played by Freya Tingley from Perth. She plays Denise, this sort of scrappy young woman, and Johnny, played by Charles Grounds, slightly older, more erudite, but the both of them absolute kind of like these street rat characters who kind of hang out amongst themselves and you know, funny, you know, witty, but very foul-mouthed. And normally this doesn't bug me, and it didn't bug me here, but I was sort of stunned at how frequently the C-bomb is dropped in this film. And I will say, look, I wrote the book on the subject. I know that Nil by Mouth, the Tim Roth film, has the most C-bombs in film history. I reckon this makes a run for it. Ooh. I didn't get the timer out. I didn't get the, you know, the clicker out. But I was stunned by how frequently these two characters are swearing. But it gives them this very Australian, very rough and ready feel. But in essence, these two characters at the start of the film, they run out of gear. So they go and see their dealer. They don't have any money. In fact, they're in over their heads already to the dealer, who is played by Joshua Morton. His name's Kane. And he says, look, I'll front you, but only if you go do me a favor. Go to this house.
Never do drug dealers favors.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Such is the desperate mindset of these characters, Pam. Go and do me a favor. I've got some gear at this place. It's in a duffel bag. I need you to get it for me. Okay. So they sneak into this
get duffel bags.
They sneak into this very creepy house, sort of labyrinthine. It's very darkly lit. And there's this sort of decrepit figure wandering around the house that they're evading. They get the duffel bag, but suddenly the entrance that they came in through is now padlocked. And they're trying to figure out how to get out of there. At one point, Johnny decides to partake of the gear that they've stolen and disappears.
Interesting.
But he hasn't, it's not where he's gone, it's when he's gone. Oh. So the rest of the film takes place. I love that. Tristan's like, oh, and Pam's like, oh. The rest of the film takes place inside this house across different timelines. And so they're trying to find each other across these different timelines, interacting with different versions of themselves and discovering or unearthing secrets about each other, their past and even their future, that are interesting and lead to some fascinating revelations and evolutions among these two characters.
Okay.
So I won't get into anything further because we're absolutely going to get into spoiler territory, but this is for sure the kind of movie where a character opens a door and they find themselves on the other side of it, right? And we see these characters follow these loops to fulfill their destinies, their predestinations, Tristan.
Okay.
Now, you haven't seen Time Addicts yet, but this is a film that played Monsterfest earlier in the year. Was it something that was on your radar as being of interest? Are you a fan of the time loop genre?
Good question. No, I didn't know anything about this film except that it was part of the Monsterfest lineup, which is, you know, gets screened nationally, which is, you know, of contemporary horror or cult or weird films with some classics that have been remastered. And it's always great because it's a chance to, you know, see some films a little bit early or, you know, some films that will maybe not get a mainstream release and to put attention on something like this, and particularly, you know, Australian films as well, Australian genre films. So I am very intrigued about this. I've heard good things. Yeah, time loop films, I don't know, sometimes they are good and then other times it feels like you're wading through a lot of homework or whatever. And I guess it's all about how much the writing and the filmmaking can, and particularly what sounds like a quite moderate budget of a film that I assume that's it's more about the conceptual ideas rather than, you know, blowing your mind with like a big machine or some kind of construction that like Time Cop or something like that. So I'm very intrigued by this film.
I will say it looks great, and it is based on a short film by the writer-director Sam Odlum that he made a few years ago. So it looks really sharp. I will say, and Pam, I do want to hear your thoughts about this kind of movie. I don't know if you saw any of the ones I cited before, or if you kind of know the thing I'm referring to. The first half of the movie, there was an element of like, well, I know we're going to have to come back to this scene, and I know we're going to have to come back to this scene. And so there's an element of like, all right, this is... Like, you find yourself, you kind of find yourself on train tracks with these kind of films, right? Like, I know where I'm going to be looping back to fairly quickly. I will say the second half of the movie was more surprising as more revelations come out. And I was left a little, my footing was kind of unbalanced because I wasn't exactly sure where we were going to wind up. And that was quite thrilling and interesting. But do you like this kind of, a former breakfast host, Peter Barr, a big Doctor Who fan, used to call it timey-wimey stuff?
Timey-wimey.
How do you feel about timey-wimey stuff?
I feel like, I like timey-wimey. I feel like if it's got an element of like absurd, kind of, oh my god, now I'm immediately forgetting the movie from last year where everyone had the hot dog fingers.
Everything everywhere all at once.
Like that kind of silly time, like I love the absurdism that's happening there. When it's sort of gentle timey wimey, I don't know. I'm less like I'm kind of feel like I'm on train tracks too. I feel like, okay, I kind of know where this is going. Mm. But I'm definitely interested. That Charles Grounds character rung a bell for me and I was like, who is that? But I really like him, and I think I remember seeing him in something a few years ago, which I can't remember the name of. I think it's called Camp or Camp something. It was an American thing. And I remember him sticking out as like a cute Australian actor. And I was like, hey, lovely. But otherwise, I would kind of be interested to see him, I think that was like 10 years ago.
Sure.
So I'd be interested to see the character that he's playing now. The story definitely intrigues me. And I would absolutely love to get a little stopper out to count the C-bombs in that movie. I just love the cultural progression towards the overuse of it. I think it's funny.
It is.
But I really, really am interested in it. I think even if you get stuck on a train tracks, maybe it's one of those movies I'd find myself sitting in the living room watching with my parents and, you're sort of talking about it. I'm not really, I guess that speaks to how relaxed my parents are about swearing. But I think, I don't know if it's a movie that I would go to the cinemas to see, but I think it's a movie that I would watch.
Well, I will say it is in very, very, very limited release. It'll be available digitally, home video, all the equivalents fairly soon, I would say, through Umbrella Entertainment. Charles Grounds was indeed in a TV show called Camp 10 years ago, starring Rachel Griffiths.
There you apparently. Go. Yes.
So unfamiliar with that. Great to see he's still at it.
Yeah.
10 years later. But yeah, I think that's very fair. I will say that, it is funny. It is less absurd.
Okay.
It is more grounded in a version of reality. I mean, they're junkies, but they're still kind of, they're not so... what's the word I'm looking for? They end at the end of the line. We'll put it that way, right?
Yeah,
so
right.
They're still, like I said, very erudite, very witty, very funny characters. So it's silly in some ways, but it does try and be grounded, like emotionally.
Yeah.
So it's not a regularly laugh out loud inducing film. But I thought it was really interesting. I love a film. It's set in this one location, but I think they find a lot of ways to keep it interesting.
Sure.
And visually interesting as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a film. If you're into this kind of movie, but aren't exhausted by the genre yet, I would definitely recommend seeking out Time Addicts.
Nice. There you go. I actually saw a movie based on sort of a Movie Squad recommendation recently.
Mm.
Now, we talked about it a few weeks ago, but I went to see it and I thought I'd tell you that I loved it. Saltburn. I saw it.
Oh, yeah.
I went to see it a couple of weeks ago, saw it at the movies. It was went with my mum, my auntie, and my sister. Interesting choice of companions for that particular movie. But after the sort of like, insane social media presence of the reaction to that film, I definitely was even more motivated. And I would motivate anyone that is slightly interested in going to see it to go see it. It is absurd, but not in the ways that you think.
Mm.
And it's just a movie, like a movie to watch in the movies, like a movie movie. What is it that Harry Styles says?
It's a movie.
It's one of those movie movies. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it's kind of like that. I think it's definitely one that I want to flag again for folks who are looking for something to do, maybe over the Christmas period or whatever the case may be. But go and see this movie in the movies, because the experience of watching it is so fun, because it's so gross out and so silly in so many moments that you have to watch it. And the stylized elements of it are beautiful. Also, an ode to a period that I understood. You know, Ugg boots and giant, like, you know, Tumblr-esque confetti jackets is really where I needed to be reminded of, you know, the mid-2000s. So if only for the soundtrack and the use of Murder on the Dance Floor, please go see this movie. So thanks for the recommendation, Tristan and Simon. Gorge, loved it.
Pam, it's what we do. We're here to serve. Thank you once again.
Yeah, we'll catch up with Movie Squad again a couple of times before the end of the year, and you can catch up with the podcast wherever you get your podcasts for all the recommendations that you need. There's always extra bits and bobs to find in the full listen of the episode. Tristan, I was about to say Sistan and Triman.
I like that.
Wow. Simon and Tristan, the Blockbuster Babes, thank you so much for another excellent week.
Thank you.
There we go. So we also heard Pam's reaction to Saltburn, which is interesting. She was talking about it as a recommendation. And, yeah, I mean, I guess I recommended it. I mean, at the time when we reviewed it, I had seen it. You had not, Simon. And someone was recently asking about, you know, what I thought of Saltburn. And it was not a film, like, I thought was completely successful. There are some parts I didn't quite think worked or wanted it to be better, but I had to say, look, I'm glad I saw it. I like that I saw it. So that's something, even if a film is kind of like not perfect or not exactly what you wanted, that you're glad that you saw it. But I know that you saw it recently, Simon, and liked it, I think, more than I did.
I did like it, I think, more than you. And I definitely liked it a lot more than Promising Young Woman, which is a film that had a lot going for it,
yes,
but had so many caveats. And like I said, was kind of wrong-headed, I think, in how it approached the subject matter. To almost kind of fold back in on itself and be offensive in how it dealt with the what it was trying to get across about, you know, sexual assault survivors and all that kind of all that heady material that I didn't think the film was really up to the conversation of. Saltburn was a film that I really enjoyed watching, and my wife and I afterwards, we had notes. Of course we had notes, but we were so compelled by it and found it so entertaining. And I think what Pam said was exactly right. Like, it was just a fun movie to watch. And it made me think a bit of Don't Worry, Darling, which the Harry Styles quote comes from. Now, I don't think that's a very good movie at all, but I get the essence there of, like, look, it's trying to say something and failing, but it's shiny and watchable.
Yeah.
Now, that's damning Don't Worry, Darling with faint praise. Saltburn, I think, is much, much better than that. I don't think there's a lot going on under the surface, but I think as a confection, it was so entertaining.
Yeah.
And it went for it, you know? And it's so interesting, like, I had to completely disengage with the online discourse, which I basically do anyway.
Yeah.
But it's so toxic around Saltburn, with people on both poles saying, you know, wow, this is the most subversive takedown of the ruling elite versus, you know, this movie is absolute trash and saying things about Emerald Fennell that are not necessarily fair. It's like, everyone's just shut up. this is one where even as a critic, I'm like, gosh, I do not even want to hear what other people have to say about it, except when talking with yourselves and obviously our listeners, like that kind of one-to-one feedback. But I think the conversation around Saltburn, which happens every Oscar season, there's always a couple of films like this.
Yeah.
It has really made me recoil from the idea of discourse. How do you feel about that?
Well,
as someone who saw it prior to the discourse coming out.
Yeah. I think it's always it's interesting. I think you know, with sites like Letterboxd and just general social media, and that, you know, everyone, you know, can share their opinion, that, you know, it doesn't have to be a reviewer for a radio station, it can be anyone. You can, you know, have that fervent take. And that, yeah, sometimes it is that kind of that matter of extremes and that everything live or die in terms of, but you know, sometimes it is like, you know, you want to detach and just kind of, I think, you know, just be you know, hold on to what you think. And sometimes it can be interesting to just, like, read the different reactions. And even a film like Bottoms, where, you know, I liked it, but I didn't like it as much as other people. And, you know, to see the polls of complete love for it, and then, you know, people really kind of digging into why they didn't like it and hating it. And it's and I guess it's, you know, it's really up to you how much you give time to that. But it always makes me think of when I was really young and there were reviewers that I would follow, or, you know, David and Margaret on the movie show. And just, like, you know, that early stage of, like, if reviewers that you followed didn't like the movies that you did, and you would feel, like, you know, betrayed, or
kind of.
But, you know, there's something to be, you know, I think with anything, it's time goes on and you become more, you know, just, like, comfortable and confident in your opinions. And, like, you know, there's definitely, it can be helpful to see what other people write and to think about things that maybe didn't occur to you. But, it's you know, you just got to be balanced. You just got to walk the line you want, you know.
Everyone will be so much happier when they come to the realization. And Tristan, you and I know this. Yeah. We've seen so many movies, and a lot of people have seen so many movies. But This is the realization you come to. Like, 80% of films are, like, 3 or 3.5 stars. Like, they're just all fine. And then there are the ones, and that's what makes the special ones so special and what makes the bad ones so interesting. But that's not film criticism. Like, we do it because it's an easy way to recommend a film, right? Sure. And it's an easy way to, you know, mark it on Letterboxd as a personal, like memory jogger. But criticism is, like, digging into the film and touching on what works, what didn't, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I sometimes feel that when a film like Saltburn, which is effectively fine and very handsome and doesn't have a lot to say, you know, it's so interesting when there are such strident reactions across both ends. It's like, I think you're just trying to write a tweet. That's kind of where I land on.
Well, longer than a tweet sometimes. Sometimes it's a big missive. But, you know, so, yeah, I look, all, you know, and, you know, I think, you know, we're adding to the discourse. We are part of the discussion, but, you know.
Yeah, but I'm not annoyed by my opinion, Tristan.
And that's a good thing, you know. Like, no, but, like, yeah. So, but, you know, that we can just pass on these recommendations, and even if the film doesn't 100% work for us, you know, that it's like there's always going to be a different audience for something. So there you go.
That in mind, tell us about showing up, playing a purpose.
Well, that's a very funny segue, because this is a film that is screening at the time of recording next week, Monday 4th of December to Sunday 10th of December at Lottery West as part of the Perth Festival. A film I was really looking forward to and caught a preview of last week. But my partner Sally was watching it a little bit with me. And then after it finished, she just asked me, like, what do you get out of a film like that? And which is, you know, because this is the type of film where, you know, not much happens. It's not, like, plot-heavy film. And, you know, it's the type of film that ends not on some big kind of moment. It just kind of, like, ends. And I know that for some people that's kind of disappointing, or this kind of idea that it's a little bit slow or it's about nothing. But, you know, there's something to me as a viewer that I love about that. And I love that with showing up, it definitely, it's about an artist. It's about an artistic community, a college in kind of Oregon. So this is, you know, definitely an area of maybe a little bit of privilege, of people who are focusing on things that other people would think, well, that's not real work, or that's not what you should devote your life to. But, you know, it is work to them. You know, this is a film about a working artist, and it's something that feels a bit more recognizable and relatable to me, as opposed to films about, you know, the famous artist or big kind of, even, you know, the upcoming Bradley Cooper film Maestro, like this kind of, like, biographical of a genius, of a mythic figure. This is about someone who's working in an administration job at a university, who's you know, a little bit of a nepo baby. Her father was a sculptor. Her mother works at the institution. She's just trying to put together a show and finish these sculptures that she's making, but she doesn't have hot water. She is living in an apartment where it's been out for 2 weeks, and it's down to her landlady, her landlord, who is also an artist, who is also a little bit of a rival in that she's got a show going on, and she's played by Hong Chow, and they have a great kind of you know, it's the type of relationship that you would say is combative, but it's also all about the kind of the social graces. And it definitely represents a frustration where you're dealing with someone who's very, like, chill and cool and is like, hey, you know, but you just need something from them. You need something done and it's not happening. So there's a really – this film is a drama, but it's also a comedy. A little bit like we talked about with Shiva Baby, there's an element of really tension and awkwardness in this film. It is Michelle Williams playing this artist, and I loved her face in this. She's always looking kind of surly and a little bit just annoyed because she's just trying to get something done and is dealing with no hot water and all these things coming up in her way. And it reunites her with director Kelly Reichardt, who we've talked a little bit about before, but are you a fan of Kelly Reichardt's work, Simon?
I am. I definitely haven't seen the full breadth of her filmography. I love Meek's Cutoff, which is a bit of an outlier in her filmography, I think, to a degree, because it's actually quite a, like, I mean, we wouldn't call it a thriller, but it's sort of this dread-inducing drama about colonial women in America, but is a brilliant film. I did enjoy First Cow from a couple of years ago, but I haven't seen Old Joy. I haven't seen Certain Women. Is Certain Women the one with Lily Gladstone?
Yes. So Kelly Reichardt has made, you know, she's quite, she also teaches film, but she's quite prolific in making a film every 2 or 3 years and has worked with Michelle Williams before.
In Meek's Cutoff as well.
Yeah, Meek's Cutoff, Certain Women, which also introduced Lily Gladstone, currently in Killers of the Flower Moon. And Wendy and Lucy was the first film they made. And I love seeing Michelle Williams in this naturalistic indie movie mode, even though she is still kind of playing like a heightened character in the way that she's sort of frumped up in her makeup and she's just like kind of surly, but there's something I found really relatable and connected to it. And this film has a quality which is both, it's both tense and laid back. You get all these shots of people working at the college, young kids who are just like making art, and then intercut with like Michelle Williams kind of trying to deal with an injured pigeon that's been kind of foisted upon her and while she's trying to make her work. So I really like this film. It really spoke to me in a way, and I really enjoyed the tone of it, the performances, lots of great people in the cast who've worked with Kelly Reichardt before. This also is a film from, I guess, 2022. And it stands as an early preview of Andre 3000's Jazz Flute album, because this has Andre Benjamin in the cast. He plays a very relaxed a teacher, but it also features his flute work as part of the score. So there you go. For all the flute heads or the Andre 3000 heads, you'll get some lovely music there. But yeah, this is screening as part of Perth Festival, and then I'm sure it will be available digitally after that. But yeah, if you're a fan of Kelly Reichardt's work, if you're a fan of Michelle Williams, if you're a fan of this kind of slice of life that speaks to a little bit of the kind of frustrations as well as the kind of just like the observation of human nature, I would recommend showing up. I know you haven't seen it, Simon.
I'm really keen to. I actually do. And part of why I really want to see this one and haven't been so motivated to see the others, even though they're like, they're all on my list.
Yes,
they're all on my list. I have the DVD of Wendy and Lucy. I mean, I no longer have a DVD player, but what I mean by that is, like, it was, you know, I received it as a critic, you know, whatever it was, 13 years ago, and I just still haven't got around to watching it, which is totally my bad. But what's motivating me for this particular film is it feels like it evokes, like, Nicole Holofcener.
Yes.
And that kind of milieu. I don't know if that's a fair assessment.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, you know, as opposed to Nicole Holofcener with the, you know, I really loved her film from this year, You Hurt My Feelings, and the kind of the New York neurotic, you know, vibe. This has definitely got more of the Portland energy, where like it's this kind of small college town. Everyone's kind of like artistic in a way, and a little bit of a hipster. But but there is that kind of anxiety or the anxiousness of just trying to, you know, you just want to get something done, and things are in your way. But sometimes they are distractions, and other times they are obstacles, and sometimes they're necessary and sometimes they're unnecessary, you know? So, I would think that's a fair comparison and definitely one to seek out. So that's Showing Up, which is will be showing for 1 week at Perth Festival, and then will be available, I'm sure, online through digital streaming services. But yeah, it's great to include a bonus review into this podcast. I feel like we've got the audio clip at the start for Movie Squad with the Fast and Furious quote. Maybe we need to find another one that can be the bonus review sting. You know, if there's a quote where Vin Diesel says, like, you know, it's always, you gotta have an extra quart in the gallon or something like that. That could be the
thing. Or like when someone else joins the family, you know, like at the end when they have their Coronas on the patio and they're having the barbecue with the guy that's been trying to kill them for the last 110 minutes. I'll source that.
15 characters on the balcony.
Yeah, exactly. As reinforced, we know that. There might be a few more bonus reviews as we head towards the end of the year, because the film releases are only increasing, Tristan, but the weeks of us on the air are decreasing as we speed towards our top 10 in a couple of weeks. But always so fun to chat movies with you and Pam. Thank you to everyone who's listening. You're the only ones we really want to hear the opinions of. I'm not talking about you when I'm talking about the letterboxed folk and the social media. Tell us what you're enjoying, what you're loving, what you're hating, and what you're planning on watching over the summer break. Certainly emailing studio@rtrfm.com.au when we're live on the air. But certainly tell your friends, subscribe to the Movie Squad podcast. And we look forward to coming back next week.